Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
New activation and upfront payment for 3-month plan required. Taxes and fees extra. Additional restrictions apply. See mintmobile.com for full terms.
It's easy to get lost in the latest true crime podcast or your favorite binge-worthy show. But what about your own story? That's the most important story of all. And therapy helps you write it. BetterHelp Therapy is 100% online and designed to be convenient and flexible enough to squeeze in between the next episode on your list. Get started today at betterhelp.com/pause for 10% off your first month.
Jonathan Pierce.
Eric Cantona has jumped in and seen a kung fu kick, a fan!
Terry Alderton.
Do you like shoes, madam?
And friends. JP.
The mad side of genius!
And T.
Good to meet you, love.
The Football Friendly.
Welcome, everybody, to JP and T, the Football Friendly. We'll be reflecting on the Women's World Cup in just a couple of moments, but Terry, we have a very, very special guest.
Oh.
Hello, Mr. Bob Mills.
Yay!
Hello, Jonathan. Hello, Terry.
Hello, hello, hello. And as our guest, is there anything you want to say before we start?
If anyone's never heard Jonathan Pierce doing his job, I only have one example, and that was driving to a gig on a cold, wet, horrible night in those days. I'd have had a poxy old secondhand Merc, but I had my radio tuned, and I don't have any favourite football commentators. They're all much of a muchness, but all that needed saying was that Tottenham's midfield was a bit ropey. That's all that needed saying. There was a break, a goalkeeper was injured, and all that needed saying was Tottenham's midfield's a bit iffy today. But what was actually said was this. It's a blustery night here down at the lane. I'm looking up. High above us, the clouds are scuttering across from the marshes. Maybe cumulus, maybe cirrus, don't know. Never paid enough attention at school when they were being explained to me. There are many cultures, of course, that say that the clouds represent the spirits of the recently departed, shuffling off this mortal coil to go to wherever one goes to after death. I don't know. There are many different opinions on this, and I would never impugn any person's political belief. All I would say is this: if they are the spirits of the dead, they're looking down on a very disjointed display by the Spurs midfield this evening.
Brilliant. Wow.
That has lived with me for years.
That's so nice. Can I just... I need that at the moment as well, because just for anyone listening, I'm going to be a little bit off today, guys, because number seven vertebrae is broken because someone decided they were still 16 and went up a haystack and fell quite a few feet and was rushed to hospital. So that's why also I have half a chamois over one of my glasses because I'm concussed and have double vision. So that's what I did the weekend. But I got to watch some fantastic football. So I think we should cut to that straight away. Jonathan,
well,
you were at many
just,
games.
Sorry. Just before you cut to that. Please tell me that as you were leaving, a major surgeon who spent years and years training to become the best in his field ran down the corridor and said, I should have mentioned before you go, if you've got a chamois, just stick it over one of the lenses yeah. of your glasses.
That's exactly what yeah. I done. I'll have to take a photo and put it on Twitter.
And probably not drive home from here, Terry.
No, I can't drive. Yeah, I slightly am slightly worried about my vision, but apparently it can take up to 2 weeks. So that's no driving, nothing for me. But the worst thing was I bit my tongue, man. Oh wow. So it's God, it's not being funny, but we've got to make
it's fun. Not funny.
But listen, I mean, you know, they're all the jokes, aren't they? It was the final straw, the one that broke Terry's back and all that. But anyway, but it was great to watch the football the weekend. Jonathan's you were doubled up the weekend on commentaries.
Yeah, well, it's a normal weekend for me. I'd normally do the match of the day on the Saturday and then a French league game on the Sunday. And, of course, so I was at Tottenham against Manchester United on the Saturday. And,
Tottenham
second half were very good. Manchester United were feeble. And Eric Ten Hag afterwards said to me he thought they created the better chances. Don't know what game he was at, but they were very weak in that
Let
second half.
Let me ask
half.
You a question.
Worrying, so.
That's 2 weeks now you've interviewed the Australian manager. I can't remember his name, forgive me.
Ange Postecoglou.
Thank you, because I can't say it, and I knew you'd be able to.
Very impressive.
You know they always go about Eddie Howe, move your teeth, right? Yep, how about yep. he looks at you? He just
oh, looks down, doesn't he?
He's really, really, what's it called? What's that Bob? That's insecurity, that, isn't it, when someone's looking down?
Yeah. I think so, yeah. I think so. He must feel, for all he's achieved, though, it must be a weird thing for him to suddenly be managing in the Premier League.
I'm sure
he's full of confidence. I'm sure he has a great inner confidence, but it must be strange.
I'll tell you what he's done, Bob. That place was rocking on Saturday, and last year it was like a... I don't know. It was like a football cathedral without an audience, without anyone in there, the congregation. Yeah. And then yesterday or Saturday, it was just brimful of just noise. And I'll tell you what it was brimful of, joy. They went there. The Tottenham fans have just been waiting for something to happen for them. And I think he's leading this. You know, at Brentford the previous week, he got the players before kickoff, not afterwards, not after the game results, no. He got them before kickoff to go to the away fans, the Tottenham fans in the corner. I hadn't seen that before at Spurs. Mm. He's just brought in different things. And there's just, I don't know, there's a sense of optimism about the place. But I have to put it in context that Manchester United were feeble. And Eric Ten Hag, you know, he can blame his players or this and that and say they didn't get decisions. But if he's going to play one holding midfield player in Casemiro, he's got trouble because he needed help in there.
The way they're playing is... can you hear me? Am I loud enough?
Yeah, you're fine.
Sorry. I think he's really, really changed their gameplay this season from what they were playing last year. It seemed like he carried on from what they were doing, you know, after everyone had been in charge of Manchester United. And this season, he's tried to stamp his thing. And they're playing in such a different way, which is, I think, boring.
Well, he's playing Rashford through the middle. Rashford wants to play on the left-hand side. He's playing one holding midfield player. For me, Anthony postures like a world beater, but he flatters and deceives. Garnacho is not ready enough. And Rashford through the middle, that would have been like playing Laurie Cunningham at Leighton Orient at centre back.
Yeah, yeah, probably his statue that's famously outside and beautiful.
Would he be your greatest that you saw down there, Bob?
Well, here's an admission: I never saw Cunningham play for Orient, so I would certainly say he's one of the greatest players they've ever had there. Now, the greatest player I ever saw down there, and I say this quite unashamedly, was Alan Comfort.
All right.
As he is now, the Reverend Alan Comfort, who had such a tragic thing in his career where he got the big move and he went and got an injury which now would be maybe 3 months out, but back then was game was, you know, career ending, ACT or whatever it was, and then rebuilt his life as a vicar and what have you. But in terms of pure skill, the ability to get a football and just look ahead and think there's only two of them, I can do that.
Yeah, lovely.
That's a wonderful thing. So he would be the pound for pound the best that I've ever saw down there. Yeah, you see, I never saw Laurie Cunningham. Let me tell you something. Sorry, I'm not taking over.
It's all about you. Yeah,
it's a very weird thing about me. I think Terry knows this. Jonathan probably doesn't. If I was to say to you or to any guy about our sort of age, I'm married, been married a long time, got two lovely kids. Very happily married. When I was a younger man, I got married when I was very young, and I was married for about 3 years, and that didn't work out, and I got divorced, and I'm now married for the second time with a very happy family. You would just then say, oh, okay, and move on to the next conversation. Mm-hmm. If I was to say to you, though, I have been passionately in love with two different lower league football teams, and I moved from one to the other, your immediate thing is, yeah, he's a wrong un.
Not if the team went bust.
Because that's what happened to me. I grew up in the north of England, and I grew up in Chester, and I supported Chester until I was 16. And then when I was 16, I moved to London, and I could no longer, I couldn't afford to go back and forward to Chester. So I adopted a new football team, and so for the last 44 years I've been a fan of Leighton Orient, but I joined too late to see Cunningham play.
I think, to be fair, Bob, I think a lot of people at school were Liverpool fans at first, you know, of our generation, or Manchester United, and they then changed and went, oh, I'm gonna watch my local club. So I don't think you're alone there. I think
I've commentated on Chester at three different grounds. The original one, which I think
Sealand Road. Moss Rose, you would have done when they went to Macclesfield.
When they went there, and then the new one. So I think I've commentated on them over the years.
I played the new one.
Have you?
Quite a while back. Yeah, it's a tiny little ground, actually.
You're not going to be playing soon, sorry. Is that bad news for you now?
Jonathan, I will never. It's hilarious. Southend have been in trouble, and we've had no goalkeepers and whatever, and the nightmare that's been going on there. The amount of people that tweet me going, you better get your gloves on. I'm like, I'm 52. You can't be joking. We've got to be hard up. There's probably some kid playing Sunday League that can go.
So your love affair started with Chester. Well,
it did, yes, and it was a great love affair. I loved it. They were a fabulous side back then. They got to the semi-finals of the League Cup, of course, where Villa beat them by one goal. We had lovely runs in different things, and it was a magical. It's where I fell in love. None of my family have any interest in football, which is really strange because my uncle, I have an uncle who played for Great Britain in the Olympics. Back in the London Olympics after the war, my uncle Eric Lee played in the Matt Busby managed GB team in that. There was a whole book about it. But none of my family were interested in football. I had a stepdad and a nice, lovely guy, but they had no interest in football. So my friend and I just used to go, just the two of us. No one at school was really into it either, to be honest. And so my love affair started then. And that is why, even to this day, I don't like going to big football matches. I don't like going to Wembley. I've been to most of them, been to Old Trafford, been to the Emirates, and I never feel comfortable. I think if you grow up on fourth division football, that's your place.
I totally agree with you on that. I totally agree. You feel like you're part of something as well. What was that brilliant thing? We did a charity do the other night for Southend. Jonathan and Bob kindly turned up, and he did this great thing. Great thing. What was that wonderful thing you said about Chelsea and being a lower league fan and being
there's a Freemasonry of lower league football, which is, of course, we support. I support the Orient, so of course I hate Southend with a vengeance. However, I do know every day of my life that they're but for the grace of God. You know, that every lower, whether you're Gillingham, Southend, or whoever you are, you're aware of the fact that you're part of a subsection, and we think of an even better subsection. And my thing is that there'll be another Gulf War at some point. It's already happened with Russia and their money suddenly being cut off. So all this, these big, you know, these huge conglomerates, Man City, it will all come crumbling down. Football will eventually, pop will eat itself. But I think the allusion I made was that the one creature that will remain after any nuclear holocaust will be the cockroach. and we should pride ourselves, lower league supporters, of being the cockroaches of football.
Lovely. I tell you what, as well, the lower league fan thing we've got as well. If you think you support a big club, and Jonathan can come in on this, because to be fair, you know, you've been in the lower leagues, even though your club is Bristol City, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
If you think you are the supporter of a big club and you have these rows and bobs, no, our club's much bigger than your club. Well, you'll find out if you draw a little club in an FA Cup and see how many of us turn up. That's how you'll know.
I
it wasn't that long ago, quickly as well, that not many people would turn up for Tottenham. So, you know, not that long ago.
I'll just mention about Bristol City, because you mentioned them. I was there when they went top of the first division. I was working with my dad. We were filming the games for, I've said it many times on the podcast, for video analysis. We were the first club that ever did it. And I was there at Arsenal in 1976 when they won the opening game of the season. Paul Cheesy got the goal. We were briefly top in the land for that day. And then about 7 years later, maybe 6 years later, I was there when they lost at Rochdale. And I was working for Radio Bristol then. And they went 92nd in the land. And they'd gone top, second, third, fourth, bang, 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 bang. It was awful. We went to Rotherham in a League Cup tie, and I was there, and this was the first year they just come out of the top flight, right? And we went out very early season, League Cup tie, and I went on the pitch with the players before, and it was like this swagger, hang on a minute, you know, we've got Norman Hunter there and Peter Cormack. Well, I think Norman had gone by then, but, you know, big, big players, Joe Royal, and we'll be back, you know, who are you, Rotherham, anyway. And then 3 years later, they were looking down on us from a mighty height. So, and when you're talking about the non-league teams, what I'd be interested in is comparing, and I'm not having a go here, but it's something that the WSL need to address, and on the back of the World Cup, having reached the final, we'll talk about that in a minute, the WSL have to address this, because they're getting big financial push from the FA. If take away from when they play at the Premier League grounds, the parent clubs, when they play at, say, Chelsea at King's Meadow and so on, how does that WSL conglomerate attendance match the attendance of the National League? Because I think you'll be shocked. And yet they're getting a lot of funding, and it's something they need to address. They need to stand on their own two feet now and really push push on as a league. Well, that's my opinion, and that's not having a go. What did you make of the World Cup, Bob? The Women's World Cup? Did you watch
it? Yes, I did. I enjoyed it tremendously. I watch England play, women or men. I agree with you. I had a very interesting conversation with Emma Hayes when I was working for a radio station. She was a guest on it, and she's a very, very good thinker on the game. And she made it plain that there was a slight worry amongst some of the people involved in the game about how quickly this was all happening, and that in the natural run of events, it should take, of course it's happened too quickly, because, you know, it was illegal until the 70s. So God bless them for getting this far. But her thing was, if you go that fast to this point with the Lionesses, you are making the gap bigger and bigger. You are stretching. If you're not bringing the people, the lower regions of the game with you, then you will eventually... And I think she likened it to the one of the many, many in the 70s and 80s when America decided that they were going to have soccer and bought Beckenbauer and bought paid men. And they're doing it again. Saudi Arabia, but doing it now. And what you build is this uber cliche at the top of top players. And this is so exciting. But that can't survive. unless it's a pyramid, it can't survive because there's no strength at the bottom of it. So I would worry slightly about that, just as you do. But I guess now isn't the time. It's because they've done, you know, they've done a wonderful thing and they've inspired a nation, and there are now literally millions of young girls saying, "I now want to be a footballer," and that's fine. But in the long term, I'm hoping that within the women's game, there are minds that are thinking, okay, hang on a minute. There has to be a lot of planning now. If we're suddenly getting an inrush of funds and that has to be spread around a little bit more. Because you're exactly right. And it's not even just in the women's game, in the men's game. The National League, when we were in it, there were crowds there that you wouldn't see if you moved down to the second level in France, Germany, or Italy, even. There were crowds. So it's such, you know, you've got to build from the bottom.
Yeah, well, that's exactly true. At home, we get between 5,000 and 7,000. Also, we're in the National League South End. And also, let's not forget AFC Wimbledon, when they made their rise to coming back, right down in the Isthmian Leagues and what have you, you know, they were turning up to all the games with like 2,000, 3,000 people. Mm. So, yeah, it's very true.
I think this World Cup's done fantastically well for the game, and I know the King has come on board now and said, you know, the legacy of these players will never be forgotten. I just want them to move beyond this legacy thing now. You know, it's set up, they've done that, they'll never be forgotten, the legacy is there, but now move on. You know, let's not talk about legacy so much, let's start winning things. They won the European Championship and they came close here, but they weren't good enough in the end against Spain. Spain were a much better team, and Spain have invested at club level, much better than we have. And, you know, they're Barcelona's and Real Madrid's. These are getting huge crowds. That's why they can afford the Lucy Bronzes of this world, the best players in the world, because they pay more wages than WSL. You know, I've been told that by a top WSL manager. So we've just got to get on board a little bit like the Spanish have. They're under 17 world champions. They're under 20 world champions. Mm. They progress this, you know, and they were the better team. I think the World Cup has done fantastically well. And, you know, you see girls now playing in the parks, in the streets, which you never saw before, really. And it's all brilliant. It's not helped by a man who wears probably $1,000 suit up on the podium with white trainers on. The president of FIFA.
Yeah.
Spouting on all the time. Oh, this is brilliant. This is great. This is the best ever. This is the best ever. Look, he's involved every couple of years, every 4 years, or whatever. The football now in Bulgaria, women's football in Bulgaria, is he checking on that in the next couple of years? Or women's football in Zambia, is he checking on it? I doubt he will be. I doubt he'll be that interested. It's got to be a constant thing. They've got to be constantly developing. And it's not. You know, a circus every 4 years. It's got to be more sensible than this. And seeing him up there and seeing him wanting to be in the photograph with the referees, I'm sorry. You know, that's not his role. And there's other things to address in the game. I mean, how can the president of the Spanish FA kiss one of their players, full kiss on the lips?
Yeah.
And she clearly startled her.
Yeah, it's weird that, isn't it? He wouldn't be kissing the men, would he?
No. Well, I don't know.
Well, he could. I mean, there's no problem there. But
the president of RFA, future king of the land, kissed, I don't know, John Terry on the lips or whatever, FA Cup on. It created a stir, wouldn't it? And what thought that would be. But anyway, you know, I don't know. We've got to move on now, anyway, from the Women's World Cup.
Well, exactly. And I think, and I really think there are enough minds within the women's game who are thinking along those lines, who are thinking, yeah, let's not get carried away. Let's not just be a big thing once every 2 years with the European Championships and the World Cup. Let's be a constant big thing. Let's be aiming not to win the World Cup every 4 years at European Championship. Let's be aiming to have 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 every week at these grounds. You know, and build up from there, because that's the future, is people coming every Saturday and every Tuesday to watch the game.
Because surely, Bob, it'd be beneficial as well. You know, I know they're going to play more games now at the parent grounds this season than they ever have done before. But, you know, playing it after a men's game, playing it before a men's game, you then occupy the stadium for longer. You've got more revenue coming into your bars. For me, this is a no-brainer. But look, I think they did. I think Carter was brilliant. Greenwood was brilliant. The goalkeeper, Merriam's, what a story that is, because she had such a hard
time.
James
as well. James.
You know, these are all fantastic stories. The Lauren James one, I would say, Terry, people, oh, look, they had to overcome a problem with Lauren James sent off. She got herself sent off.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, oh, look, Leah Williamson, oh, they didn't have Mead. No, they didn't.
Lauren James.
Spain didn't have 13 players.
She's a good footballer, man. I'm going to say something you can't say in this world anymore. She plays like the fellas. So, I mean, she's a good footballer, man. She's strong and powerful and bright, and I love her. She's amazing.
At its best, watching it at its best, and we saw some of the best over this World Cup, women's football is a fabulous sport.
I totally, absolutely agree with you.
In the same way that women's tennis, I liken it to women's tennis in that it's not the same as men's tennis.
Nope.
Of course it isn't. But at its best, it's an equally enjoyable
sport. I totally agree. Lovely interplay football. No rolling around. None of that nonsense that goes on either. There's no gamesmanship going on. They get on with it. And do you know what I thought was lovely as well? You know when, what was the name who cut her head open? When she got elbowed? Sorry, Jonathan. My brain. In the final.
The Spanish player?
No, the English girl. She was on the ground, wasn't she? Our left back.
Oh, Alex Greenwood.
Thank you. I thought it was lovely that typical girls, don't shoot me, girls. I'm on your side. Were the girls, they all rallied round, didn't they? They're going, quick, she needs a new shirt. Get her shorts on. They were all getting her dressed and everything. You know, imagine that being fellas.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
she could. She with the laws. They didn't want her to go off so they brought the shorts and shirt on.
I know, but if it was fellas, they'd just be going. There wouldn't be any of that going on. I just thought it was right.
I'll tell you what, though. Here's one for you. When I first started doing the women's commentary, which is 10 years ago now, a very senior England player said to me at the time, do me a favour, will you, when you're doing the commentary, don't compare us to the men's game. It's the same rules of association football, but it's a completely different game.
Mm-hmm.
So don't compare us. And I think that's really important, you know, that people are,
true.
Oh, but it's not as good as all this. No, it's a completely different thing. But listen, let's
can I just say on that before, because we're going to have to go to a break, but I just want to say one thing very quickly. And you know me, I really don't like coming down on people. I'm not that kind of person. You know, you've got nothing good to say, don't say it. But I've got to tell you, Jonathan, and I know they're a colleague of yours, but it's the first time I've ever watched a final, because I generally watch them on BBC, but I turned over, mate. I cannot be doing that Robin girl. I cannot be doing her, mate. I'm sorry. She you can't say anything here, I know.
No, I'll defend her. She was ill. She had a problem with her voice.
Mate, she's not ill. She's awful all the time, Jonathan. Look, she may be absolutely gorgeous. Look, she may be a lovely girl, but I'm sorry, man. I don't do people down, but I had to turn over. I can't do it.
I think they got 12 million, and ITV got about 3.
Well, so, she's right and I'm wrong, but I mean...
No, Terry, it's not right and wrong. The thing is, when you take a gin... I stopped listening to Alan Parry, okay? Now, I've met Alan Parry. He's a perfectly nice man, and he's a very knowledgeable man, but I could not bear his voice. I could not bear his attitude, and I stopped listening. And that's, I'm thinking, do you know what it is? That's me, but that's great. I'll go on this side. I'll listen to this person.
Right.
So it's fine. So yeah,
it's my choice. It's only my choice.
Yeah.
So luck to her. Good luck to her. And I shouldn't, but... I can't. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't. Just goes. Forget it.
All commentators get hammered. I get absolutely slaughtered in social media. And do you know what effect that has on me, Terry and Bob Mills?
None.
Absolutely
none.
Nothing.
No.
Shoulders. No. Don't care.
Well, can you imagine us two? We get caned all the time.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I want to. You just mentioned Alan Parry. Alan Parry. There, the connection between Alan Parry. And myself and football. Talk about it after the break.
JP&T, the football friendly. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, JP and T. Our special guest is Bob Mills. You mentioned Alan Parry a moment ago. Now, the connection between myself and Alan Parry is Alan Parry's director of Wickham Wanderers. My granddad, Tom White, used to be manager at Wickham Wanderers just after the First World War. I loved him. Long Tom, I used to call him. There's pictures up there at Wickham Wanderers. And I loved him. He was a bad one. He was naughty. And he got nicked, right? He robbed the Christmas box, not at Wickham Wanderers, but a company he used to work at. He was in charge of the Christmas box, right? Now, wrong person didn't trust him with it. If I was alive at the time, I'd have said to them, look, don't give Long Tom this money. Anyway, so he's nicked Annie. And they got him when the steamers used to go off Brighton Pier to the continent. And it was Christmas. He was trying to, because they realised there's no money now for the Christmas. So they caught him. At the end of the pier, and it was 1929. The only reason they didn't bang him up is because my grandmother was pregnant with my mum, 7 months pregnant, and she'd have ended up in the workhouse or something. So that's how long Tom stayed out in jail. Anyway, he was then disconnected from Wickham Wanderers for obvious reasons. But he used to sit me on his knee in the Earl of St. Vincent pub in a part of Wadebridge in Cornwall where I come from, and it's a place called Eglishale, tiny, beautiful, lovely. Lovely old pub. Anyway, he used to sit me on the knee in the snug, and he used to let me sip from his Guinness, which explains a lot. And and he used to tell me about Herbert Chapman's Arsenal, because he was an Arsenal fan, and he used to tell me all these great stories about these wonderful teams and Wolverhampton Wanderers in the 1950s and Blackburn in the Cup Final and all this sort of stuff. And that's where it began. That's where the love began. Bob, you talked about earlier on, you know, that's where it began for me. And that's all I wanted to do. All I wanted to do was be a footballer. And when I wasn't good enough, you know, this, I'd be a commentator. But it was Long Tom in the snug of the Earl of St. Vincent pub in Eglishale. And he was a bad un, but I loved him to bits.
I often talk about the three ages of the football fan. When you're young and you think, yeah, I'm going to be a player, I'm good, I'm the best player in this, I'm the best player in this playground. And then you get to about 15 and you think, oh, these kids are so much better than I am. And you give up on that. And then you compromise and you get on with your life and you do that. And then but in your 20s, you start thinking, I could do me badges. I could do me coaching badges. I could come up through the ranks. I could manage this team. I could, because I know more than these. I know more than Brush does or Tommy Taylor. I could manage this team. And then that passes as well. And then suddenly in your 40s, and you start doing, and the lottery starts, and you think, I could buy this club.
He's exactly right.
1.6 million. I could buy that club.
Three lucky numbers. Right.
It's exactly right. That was my path. That is continuing to be my path. And I'll tell you one of the best things that happened during lockdown was, you know, we went on the Zoom, didn't we? And we met people and that and got in contact with it. And the people when I was down at Bristol City when I was a kid and everything, a lot of those people have now come back to communicate with them. People like David Mogg, you wouldn't know him. He's England youth goalkeeper at the time. Didn't quite make it. Bristol City went to Bath. And older players... Chance and Derek from the 1960s. People probably won't know him outside of Bristol, and all these people that knew me when I was a little boy. And it's brilliant, you know, that the football community is just unbelievable, and football fans and there's nothing like it. I'm so privileged to have been involved, you know.
Oh, there's a whole different conversation that we have, but it's one thing that when I was working, I used to work for TalkSport, and I was there just from a fan's point of view. I never pretended I'd ever played any football. I'd never had, although I did play at the old Seed and Rose Stadium when Cherry Grove won the Cheshire Junior Schools Cup Final against a team that included both the Futcher twins. But that was in the past. I move on from there. But the thing that used to fascinate me is when footballers are talking off air, and there's this camaraderie and there's this thing. And one of the things that I used to find when I was, whenever two players came on, I would always quickly get on the computer and try and find something that linked them. And I would say at some point, Jim White would do the proper interview. And then I'd say, do you remember playing for England under 17s? You played at Millmore. You played against Guyana at Millmore. And they said, yeah, I remember the game. Yeah, yeah. And I said, well, here's the team that played. Do you remember? And almost without doubt, there would be a name that I didn't recognise, and they would both say, yeah, he was the one. That boy was the one. Phil Murdoch, he was the best player. Under 70, he was the best player I ever saw. Yeah. What happened? Oh, it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know, lost interest, moved away. And the thought that there are people out there who could have been, were that close to be in it, but just, I don't know, something happens. They just moved on.
I've read that in autobiographies before when they've gone about the player that was miles better than all of them and they just walked away from it. Who is it? I knew someone actually famously who hated playing football, couldn't stand it, but was really good. Who was it? It was someone at Tottenham. It'll come to me. It was still Terry that told me about it. They hated the game, but they were just very good at it.
There's the guy who used to do Talk Sport, and he does, is it not Kevin? He got an England cap really, really late.
Oh God, we are so middle-aged men, aren't we? You know, the Duda. We're all trying to find out from each other. It's ridiculous.
He's still on television now.
Middle-aged turns into a quiz, doesn't it? You know, you just get into a conversation, it turns into a quiz. Right, he's on telly.
Got two eyes.
He's got
a couple of legs.
Married a woman, strange woman. She had half a beard. Anyway, kept guinea pigs. Had a garden. Had a 50 acre ground full of guinea pigs. Anyway, he's dead. Anyway,
he's dead. Yeah. I'll tell you what is interesting. We talk about this. Everyone remembers the brilliant In Bed With My Dinner. Now, I'll say this because Bob will go, no, you can't say that. I'm going to say it. If you don't know In Bed With My Dinner, it's brilliant. If you know Harry Hill's burp, well, there you go. Okay, enough said. Right. It would be brilliant to do In Bed With My Dinner a football one, wouldn't it? Like lower league and stuff. Hilarious. Muggy Bonnets.
I did two things. I did I never had any money out of In Bed With My Dinner. Bless her. It was Janet Street Porter. Do you remember when telly started going on after midnight?
Yeah.
Because it used to finish at 11, then it was midnight. And LWT, with Janet Street Porter there, bless her, she was put in charge of shows between 12 o'clock and midnight, and 2 o'clock, which was the close down. And the rule was absolutely simple. If you had a good idea and you could do it for under £1,000, you could have a slot. And so that's what we did with In Bed With My Dinner. So we never earned any money out of it. But I did get two little deals out of it. I did Heroes and Villains, one of the European Championships, one of the World Cup, which were done in the style of My Dinner, and they were quite good. But here's the thing about football and comedy, Terry, and I don't know how you
find probably it. Already know this, but go on.
But here's the really weird thing, John. Sometimes when I turn up at gigs, like the South End one we did in favour of South End, and funnily enough, one I did last night, there were a couple of O's fans there, and they always say, you're going to do some football stuff, you're going to do about the O's. And it's like the kiss of death. If you're a comedian and you're not at a football club dinner, is to talk about football.
Mm.
Because there is no one who dislikes football. They either love it or they hate it.
Mm.
And if you start talking about it, half the audience, they might as well walk out. They just completely, doesn't matter how funny it is. No, we don't like football. We don't like people who talk about football. Mm. And they completely turn off.
Yeah, but In Bed With My Dinner football, it would be you picking out old footage of fans and stuff. That's the difference. I mean, you don't even have to be into football to be getting that. I'll tell you, Jonathan, you don't know about Bob. You might do, but he's a dark old horse. Because I was watching a film.
Who's that dog? Who's that dog?
Oh, it's either mine or Jonathan's, but I think it's mine.
Not mine. Mine are up for getting their hair cut.
You're professionally got yours.
Do you know where my two dogs are? John, do you know where my two dogs are? They're at doggy daycare.
Oh my God!
No.
What are you like?
Doggy daycare.
You've sold out, Bob Mills.
we've got builders in. We've got builders in, and they're going in and out of the back garden. And the gates are being left open. So my dog got a doggy daycare.
Really?
120 quid a week.
Oh, wow!
Wait a minute.
Crunch. I can't even say it. Oh my God, me back. Let me just finish this very quickly. But I was watching this film, right? And I've known Bob for so many years, and I know all the work he's done. Anyway, I started watching this film called Pierpoint, right? And it's a phenomenal film, okay, Jonathan? And it stars the brilliant Timothy Spall, who's unbelievable in it. And it's about the last hangman, basically. Yeah. And it's a what? You know this, do you?
I know.
Anyway, the credits come up.
Alfred Pierpoint, wasn't it?
Yeah. Written by Bob Mills. I nearly fell off my seat. And I rang him up straight away going, you didn't write this, did you? Yeah. And I went, wow, I never. So people out there listening, if you want to watch an amazing film that you didn't know Bob Mills had written, it's absolutely phenomenal.
So I've had this idea for this film. I was working at Granada started making films, and I was working at Granada, and they said, they said Ray Winston wants to do a film for us. Go and see him and see if you can pitch something. So we went to Ray Winston's house, and we went in his kitchen first, and then we went down his garden to his pub.
Did he have the pub then? He had the pub,
yeah, he's got the pub, yeah.
Yeah, the pub's Jonathan, you'd love his pub. It's insane. He's got a proper boozer in his garden.
Well, yeah, even to the point with the Perspex thing over the sandwiches.
You'd blow your mind. You can't believe it, but go on. Sorry, Bob.
But we're talking about various ideas, and he's not interested really in any of them. I haven't got anything. And then right at the very, very end, for some reason, Albert Pierpoint's name come up, and he said, oh, I'm fascinated with him. And I said, well, we've wasted the last hour then, because I'm fascinated with him. Well, and I was fascinated with Albert Pierpoint very, very quickly, Jonathan, for one reason. When I was growing up north, I saw him on Look North. Bill Grundy and Brian Redhead used to present a show called Look North. And they had one of the debates that they have every 20 years or so about bringing back capital punishment. You know, it's flared up. And he was one of the speakers, and they spoke to all these people, politicians and people in the audience, and then they turned to Albert Pierpoint and said, now, Albert, no one knows more about this than you, because you in your time have executed over 400 people. And he said, well, just let me stop you there, if you don't mind, young man, for a minute. I've never executed anybody. I've gone to the jails and gone to the prison cell, and the cell door is open, and the Queen's executioner has entered the cell and has carried out the execution on behalf of the courts. And then the Queen's executioner has left the cell, and I've walked out of the prison and gone home. And I thought, wow, that's how you've done it. That's how your brain has coped with the whole thing. And I became so. So Ray Winston says, yeah, we should do something about Pierpoint. So we'll go away and write a script about Pierpoint. And it's quite, you know, it's all a bit eclectic. Blah, blah, blah. We write the script. We give it to the script. I give him the script. And he says, come and have lunch. And we go at the Ivy, tastes the Ivy, and says, I read this script. It's brilliant. I didn't know it was so cerebral, all the thinking that goes into it, all this brilliant. It's a brilliant script. It's fabulous. Yeah. Not for me. So I said, really? Nah, it's not for me. It's not what I thought, really. It's not. And bless his heart, it was a terrible, cheeky thing to say to him. But I said, Ray, did you think he went into Wormwood Scrubs with four snooker balls in a sock?
That was your tool.
And he said, well, you're taking a piss, boy. But yeah, I had that more in my mind. You kill someone, I'm gonna nut you.
I mean, what a chance to play something like that. And in fact, what came to pass was
Timothy Spall.
I mean, wow, absolutely fantastic performance. And did you get any nominations or any awards for that? Was it awarded?
No, we didn't. And I'll tell you for why.
Wow.
Granada made two films that year. And you have to understand that you only get awards if your publicity department goes into overdrive and pushes.
Yes, of course.
They made two films that year that came out at the same time. One was My Pierpoint with Timothy Spall. The other was The Queen with Helen Mirren.
All right, okay.
So all the budget for publicity kind of went into that, and quite rightly, and that won a lot of awards, which we probably wouldn't have won anyway because it's quite a macabre subject.
It is an absolutely phenomenal piece. Jonathan, if you've not watched it, and I urge everyone listening to it, is absolutely, I mean, it is macabre, yeah, there's no doubt about it, but it's a fantastic, it's a bit I love, Bob, is when the penny drops in your own head. that he's trying to break these records, you know, of the people that he's murdering, you know. And even though these people are evil, deemed to be evil, blah, 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 but, you know, there is one person doing that at the end of the day, you know what I mean? And I don't want to spoil it, but it's beautifully shot. Who directed it?
Adrian Shergold, I think.
Beautifully. It's very dark and shot shadowy, and it's lovely. It's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful.
Anyway, let's get back to Ashton Gate and Millwall.
One more on Ray Winston, right? When he talks about football, I will listen to him. There's not all actors or people in show business when they talk about football, I'll listen to because they attach themselves and it's for other reasons. Ray's genuine West Ham to his, you know, in his blood, and so I listen to what he says, and I've never met him, you know.
Shall I ask him if he'll come on?
Yeah, I don't really care about the podcast, Terry. What I'm more interested in is if he's going to ask me down the pub at the bottom of his garden.
Yeah, come down the pub in the bottom. It was up the road to me, so all right, I'll get on the case and see.
You know, they say don't ever meet your heroes. One of my heroes in life.
He's lovely. You'll love him.
One of my heroes in life is Rod Stewart, right? And people might say,
what a lovely man.
Anyway, so I'm talking to my missus once, and I said, they say you should never meet your heroes. And I said, no, Rod Stewart, you know, I'm not too sure whether or not he'd live up to my, you know, my dreams of him. Well, you met him? No, I've never met him. No. Remember, and I've got a friend called Ray and his wife Cherry, and they do music promoting, and they promoted Rod's tour, right? She said, yeah, Ray and Cherry got us tickets behind to the VIP bar afterwards, a few years back. No, I never met Rod Stewart. Yeah, you were talking to him for an hour about football. And I went, no. God, I must have been absolutely hammered. I must have been hammered or very, very nervous because I can't remember any of it. See, when we were talking about In Bed With Me Dinner, I went on with you, Bob, didn't you? You got me on. And I was so... I don't know what I was like on the television because I was so nervous meeting you. And I was so nervous being on that programme. It was either that programme or the Heroes programme you did. I can't remember. You had me on. And... it's funny, isn't it? When you do these things, it's strange things. I could do Match of the Day, 7.5 million people every week, but I can't see them. So it doesn't bother me. If I go, well, Terry, you know this. If I go on stage to do something for our charity, the Lily Foundation, I'll be sick beforehand.
I'll tell you what you did,
I'm sick in the toilet beforehand.
You did a programme. I used to do a programme at LWT called There's Only One Brian Moore. And that's it. And that was a wonderful programme because what they had, this is the actual, under the, it's gone now, the LWT building on the South Bank, but they had a big basement, sub-basement and a basement, and it was literally full of, it's like a massive, like the British Library, but full of tapes. And they said, any tape down here you can use in one of your shows. And there were all the big match ones with Brian Moore.
Oh, lovely.
So we put together a show where we had an audience and we showed 10, 15 minutes of two matches from Brian Moore. Just played them out. But then we had players. We had a celebrity fan and we had a player and a manager who'd been involved in those games.
Oh, and brilliant.
It was a very good show because footballers now, you can't get a word out of them. Because they're very media savvy. They know, I'm not going to say anything about him because he may be my manager next season. Mm. But players from the old days will say absolutely anything. We had some wonderful, wonderful things. The one I remember more than anyone was Malcolm McDonald was on. Malcolm McDonald was on and somebody was talked about the Orient semi-final and they said, yeah, because those two goals that you claimed, Malcolm, and people laugh and then each other. And there was a gap of about 2 minutes, and Malcolm said, sorry, what are you talking about, the two goals I claimed? And they said, well, they were both rebounds, one went off someone's back and the other one went off Glenn Roeder's knee, and they went in. But you, no, excuse me. You will find, if you look at the record book, that those two goals were both scored by Malcolm McDonald. It doesn't matter who hit them. And he got so irate. And people said, mate, we're just having a laugh with you. Well, I don't find it funny.
Yeah.
You're disparaging my reputation as a goal scorer. Yeah. And we're encouraging your reputation as a claimer of goals. That's all we're doing, Malcolm.
I'll tell you what, I played in a few charity matches with Peter Beardsley, right? And he on the similar subject of what you're saying, he would play like he was Saturday afternoon against flipping Premier League opposition. he used to go mad at the referee and stuff. You'd be thinking, mate, it's just a charity match.
Right, yeah. Jonathan
it's
mentioned...
It's in him.
You mentioned Norman Hunter. He's at Bristol City. Alan Clark told me this... Sorry, no. Duncan McKenzie told this story on that programme, Brian Moore. He said he got invited to the Maracanã in Brazil to play for an England veterans team. So we was all in our, not old, but late 30s, early 40s. And there was a big match at the Maracanã. And we got treated, my God, he said, we got flown out first class. And we said, these beautiful hotels. And then we go out on the pitch and it's full. The Maracanã's full because we're the pre-game to the big game they've come to see. And we're playing against Gerson, I think, was playing for them. And Jairzinho was probably in the team. And I was there. Duncan, he said, and Norman was playing. Norman Hunter was playing. He said, and after, in the second half, they took off a few of their players and they brought on some younger players. He said, and they brought on a kid who I think, he said, I might be wrong, but it was, I think it was a very young Ronaldinho or Ronaldo. He's one of the players who went on to become. It was very young. He said, and he got the ball and he put his foot on it and he jiggled about for a minute and then he nutmegged Norman and went round him and carried on. He said, whoa, la lambra, all the fancy guy. Said about 2 minutes later, he got the ball again. He put his foot on it and he did a little jiggle and Norman went in on the back of his leg. So the kid span through the air and landed on his back. He said, and the stadium was completely silent and the ref was looking like, what do I do here? He said, and Duncan McKenzie said, I went over and Norman said, Norm, mate, look how we're being treated here. It's a celebrity football match, which is, you can't take it. He said, Norman Hunter turned to me and said, you can jump over as many minis as you want, Duncan, but you never made it in England because you let people take the piss.
He came to Bristol City, right, and Alan Dix brought him down. He brought Terry Cooper down, and early in his first full season, Norman, they played Stoke and Ashton Gate, right, and a very, very young Garth Crooks in the Stoke side. He dropped deep, and he started juggling the ball in the centre circle. Norman's 20 yards from him. He starts juggling the ball back to Norman, and there was a run-up. And the crowd literally went, ooh, bang. He hit Garth so hard, you know, he virtually ended up in the Bristol Rovers ground. And he had that effect. And he became Bristol City's deadly weapon with a set piece. Right, 30 yards out. Norman, no record of it at least, so no one would be... Norman sent any screamers from 30 yards. And we were so thick, the supporters... We gave it away then, didn't we? So he's then playing another team 3 weeks down. There was no television. No one had seen these things. So Norman, again, stood 25 yards. He's not going to take the free kick. The opposition aren't expecting Norman Hunter to take the free kick. And then the crowd picked, Norman, 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 Norman. Give it away. And the free kick was absolutely shy. But he was lovely, you know. He was so different off the pitch than he was on, and sadly missed. And it's coming up for 50 years since Bristol City went to Leeds United and Don Revie's Leeds, who were unbeaten that season, top of the league. Mm. And it was FA Cup tie. It was during the miners' strike. So the replay, 1-1 at Ashton Gate, the replay was played at Elland Road on a Tuesday afternoon because there was no floodlights allowed. And they won 1-0 up there. And I've talked about it before on the podcast. There's loads of stories I could tell about that day. Most of the Bristol City team is still around, very few of the Leeds, and I just think it would be, I've always wanted to do a documentary on it, so if someone's watching this and wants to put up the money and help me do it, the tie that everyone forgot, it was one of the greatest cup upsets of all time. Lowly second tier team beats the best team in Europe, 1-0 in the replay, afternoon, miners strike, that whole story can be told, and... You know, someone will nick the idea now and do it, and I won't get it. But it's just, I think that it's just, that's coming up 50 years anyway. That's another.
You could
Bristol
do that
City
with
story.
Footage, though. If you've got the newsreels and footage and stuff, you could do it. Unless you want to do it as an acting piece.
No, I mean, the Bristol City boys are still around. Jeff Merrick, Tom Ritchie, Donny Gillies, all
it,
that.
It would be. Yeah. I'll. If you want to do it, we'll talk after this because I think we could do that.
I tell you, it's just a final really weird thing about that. And even at the time I was doing that Brian Moore program, it struck me. Alan Clark was on. I think Norman did it. Quite a few of those players who were still around, because 30 years ago now, a lot of them were still around. And these big men, these big blokes, are all referred to Mr. Revy.
Mm.
No, I remember Mr. Revy saying to me. And I remember someone else. I think Bill, there was an Everton thing on, and Bill Kenwright was on as a celebrity guest. And I remember him saying, "What's it? Why is he still calling Mr. Revy?" Because that was his name. Yeah. You mean Don? No, I don't mean Don. I mean Mr. Revy. And it was incredible. These 50, 60 year old men who still looked at this guy with such awe. They still couldn't bring themselves to use his first name.
You see Cluffy being interviewed, he calls him Mr. Revy as well, doesn't he? I don't know if he's being sarcastic, but he goes,
yeah,
Mr.
he would have been, yeah. They yeah. Didn't like each other. But
I wanted to do what you do, but I wanted to do it better.
Yeah. When he was England manager, or he might have still have been at Leeds, I don't know. Anyway, he came down to Bristol City. I was a teen, and we all had to go, and we sat down in front of the first teamers. It was in the supporters club where the woman in charge of the sports club was a wonderfully named Beryl Fudge. Anyway, so we sat
Beryl
down.
Fudge again. Beryl Fudge. She's back.
Anyway,
she's back.
God bless her soul. Beryl Fudge. Return of Beryl Fudge onto the podcast. Anyway, so and they said, you know, you'll be able to ask questions later on. And the first team has said, don't ask questions, boys, because we miss in pub time if you do. Now, so it gets to the end, and he's gone, any questions? So I put my hand and ask a question. I get a kick from a first teamer in the pit of my back. Anyway, so asked a question. He answered it, and then, any more questions? I put my hand up again, two kicks, you know, and a word in my ear, you're ruining our pub time, son. Anyway, so he answered the question. That should be the end of the story. A couple of weeks later, we were at Boothroyd Park, and I was up there. We just travel on the first team bus, my dad and I, doing this filming. And I helped get the skip off into the dressing room and then had to wait outside. And there's like an area down the back of the main stand at old Boothroyd Park. That's where the coach used to come down. And I'm stood there outside the door to the Bristol City dressing room. And this man comes down, camel coat on. It's Don Revy. And all these kids are running around him trying to get autographs. And he just looks straight at me. And they're all running around, you know, around him. And he comes up to me and he goes, oh, you are the lad who asked the questions at Ashton Gate. And Don Revy stood and talked to me for about half an hour. All these kids are looking at me as if I'm, you know, someone special, which I wasn't. But it just made Don Revy made me feel 20 feet tall. And I think that's what he did to his players.
You know who our version is of that, Jonathan? The comedy, you know, the comedy version of that is Monkhouse. Yeah.
Really?
Monkhouse stopped me once in a corridor at Lenton Lane, Central Television, Nottingham. And I was he was walking down with someone, and I sort of walked past. And I'd gone, and he turned around and said, Bob Mills. And I said, you know, Mr. Monkhouse. And he started talking about something that he'd seen.
Yes.
I saw you do that thing. I thought,
yes.
And at one point, said, and that punchline, personally, I'd have left it longer, but you do it the way you do. And it was
yes.
Like,
yes.
Jesus.
Well. It's unbelievable. Monkhouse did that to me as well. It's unbelievable, isn't it? He was Jerry Alderton. And you turn around and go, oh, my God, Bob Monkhouse, right? and I go, oh, Bob, you're the governor. And I remember him saying to me, no, you're the governor now, Jerry. You're the governor now. You know, he was just wonderful, knowing about everyone, wasn't he?
He was a
gorgeous human being, Bob Monkhouse, man.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And he knew his stuff, yeah. But anyway, a time comes up.
I know. Jonathan, you mentioned Mrs. Fudge.
Yeah. Beryl.
Beryl.
Okay, I don't think it was Beryl. I think it might have been her sister. There was a terrible romantic thing that happened, is that her son... She had a son. It would have been Beryl's nephew. What are you laughing at? It's quite a sad story. Became engaged to a quite big gun athlete from the 1960s, and they were going to get married, but she wanted to keep her maiden name, a double-barreled name. But and he didn't agree to it. He said no, and that's why he didn't marry Ann Packer, right? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, hold me back. Hold me back. You hurt me back. Look, we got to go. I don't want to go. This has been brilliant. We'll do it again. We'll get you back on. This is you can get us on Twitter. Don't forget, we're at JPNT Football. We've been on with the mighty Mills.
I'm so sorry.
I don't think we've ever.
Can I use that line on Match of the Day?
Yes, you must. Join us next week when we've got, I don't know. I think we're going to be on Tuesday next week because Jonathan Sally's got things going on. But we'll be back.
Thank you ever so much, Bob.
Thanks, brilliant. Bob.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Cheers. Bye.
Hello, listener. This is Chris and Rosie Ramsey here, hosts of the Shagged, Married, Annoyed podcast.
Now, we've been podcasting for a few years now. Four years.
Four, going on five.
Yeah. We absolutely love it. We really, really do. Not only, it gives us a chance to have a proper conversation without the kids, stops we're looking at our phone all day.
Outside of this podcast, most of our lives is kids and looking at our phones. So yes, this is us living our best part of our lives.
Yeah, we've had so much fun doing it. We've built a lovely community with you guys listening right now as well.
We have indeed. Now, if you ever thought about starting your own podcast, we cannot recommend it enough. And the perfect place to start yours is with Acast. Acast have got it all. One-click sharing to all listening apps, market-leading insights and monetization through advertising, lucrative sponsorships and subscriptions.
Start or switch your podcast to Acast to join the same network as us and 92,000 more shows that love Acast as well.
92,000.
Mm-hmm.
Join Acast with a 3-month free trial using the code SMA, that's SMA. Just visit go.acast.com/join.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.